Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Shut up and put your money where your mouth is.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Welcome to a special bonus edition of The Final Table, coming to you today from the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championships at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas. I am Paul Harrah's. My partner, Dennis Phillips, has just defeated Eric Lindgren in the spades bracket of the Heads Up. To go on to round two tomorrow afternoon, where he will take on Texas Dolly Doyle Brunson, who Dennis had to defeat last year on his way to becoming the third place finisher before eventually losing to Annie Duke in the semifinals. So a rematch between Dennis and Dolly tomorrow afternoon. We have been here all day long watching some of the other competition, but more importantly, recording interviews with a bunch of the stars of poker. We can't get to all of them today. In fact, we couldn't get to all of them on one show, which is why you're getting this bonus edition as a download for our podcast listeners. On our broadcast radio show this Tuesday, you're going to hear from Phil Galfond and Joe Hashem sitting down together before they went to play in the NBC Heads Up. You'll also hear from Vanessa Selbst, who we talked about on last week's show, after she was on the initial episode of this season of High Stakes Poker, and she'll explain that big hand where she shoved with queens against Phil Ruffin, who had a set of threes, and she'll walk us through what she did in that hand and lots more. So Galfond and Hashem and Selbst coming up this Tuesday, and then on a future show, we sat down with Peter Eastgate for one of his first interviews since coming back to the world of poker, and a guy we've wanted to have on for a long time who's affiliated with PokerStars.net, and that is the former Seinfeld star, Jason Alexander. So all of that on future Final Table shows, but on this bonus edition today, we've got a hot newcomer by the name of Faraz Jaka. We've also got the great poker veteran, Barry Greenstein. And to start things off, here is the Great Dane.
We are now joined by professional poker player Gus Hansen, the first time he's been on the show. A gentleman who needs no introduction from what he has won worldwide and on the internet. One of the top players in the world, period. Gus Hansen, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, NBC Heads Up. How have you fared beforehand here at the NBC Heads Up?
Well, I know that I've played a lot of years. I know I haven't won it yet, and I know I'm going to try and win it this year. I started out poorly, losing first round. Mm-hmm. I think I got my score up to at least a positive score in total amount of matches. I think I'm like probably like 7 wins, 6 losses,
okay,
which is obviously above 50%, but
yeah.
I'm aiming a little higher than just above 50%. So if I can go 6-0 this year, then we're in the territory I want to be in. So we'll see.
Bad.
I mean, I feel confident. I mean, I've probably had the best 6 months of my poker career going back the last 6 months. I won the Heads Up, my first bracelet in London. I won a big buy-in, top-level field in the Sky Millions in London, mm-hmm. and I've been doing very well on the internet the last 6 months. So I feel like I've regained my composure, making good decisions, a little more patience, and I'm just feeling good, and hopefully I can continue the streak with a good performance here at the NBC.
What did you do to change your game?
Well, I've always said that I have a lot of good ideas. You should listen to what I say, but you definitely shouldn't do as I do. And I think I've tried lately to listen a little bit to myself, kind of remove some of the big mistakes, just some poor game selections, some being a little too stubborn, too big of an ego, just thinking I can beat everybody, but I mean, I've had sessions where I've played for 12 hours and then a fresh player comes in, and if it's a good player, you're just not going to beat him when you're playing on your 13th hour and they're fresh and ready to play. So I've made some really bad decisions over the years in all kinds of situations at the poker table, and I've removed a couple. I still have a couple more to remove, but so far so good.
But you mentioned patience, which I know is a huge thing in poker. All poker players try to be more patient than that. But this is heads up. This is aggressive. You can't wait around a whole lot, especially with this kind of a structure.
Nope. You definitely, patience is good when you're sitting at an eight-handed table and wait for the right moment, obviously in a heads up. Patience might destroy your stack, and now you really have to get lucky to turn it around. So obviously you have to play a lot of hands in heads up. And I think just throughout my career, I have played a lot of hands. I mean, I have been known as a little bit of a crazy player, playing all kinds of deuce four off suits, queen five. Mm-hmm. You give me two cards, I'll see the flop. And I think that's key a lot of times in heads up, seeing the flop. It's just such a big part of your hand. I mean, I'm a little bit of a math player. I mean, I wish I had the same instincts as Phil Ivey. I believe he has the best instincts at the poker table. But just going by simple math, I tend to love math because math never lies. And basically in hold'em, you have seven cards, and then you have to make the best five-card hand. Mm-hmm. Out of those seven cards, three of them is on the flop. So that's like 43% of your hand that's shown right there.
Yeah.
And in a heads-up battle, I think it's very important that you get to see the flop. I mean, obviously varying your pre-flop strategy, sometimes limping, sometimes re-raising, sometimes doing a little bit different, trying to keep your opponent off guard and seeing that crucial flop to kind of decide what your further action is going to be. And trust me, I'm going to see a lot of flops today.
All right. Do you c-bet almost all the time too, then make continuations?
Well, I will say actually... in my win in London in the World Series of Poker Europe, it was the heads-up tournament. Mm-hmm. I was actually a little surprised that my first win, my first bracelet, came in a heads-up, because I just think there's so many heads-up specialists out there.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I play in ring games, I play mixed games, I play limit games, I play I'm all over the table. I mean, I tried to do something different, again catching my opponents off guard. And basically, what I did is, in the final, in the semifinal, I didn't raise one time from the button. I limped every hand.
Wow. Oh, no kidding. That would scare the devil out of me.
And basically, it caught people by surprise. They didn't know. I mean, I know my opponent in the final, he was looking to see the aggressive side of me. He was looking to 3-bet me, 4-bet me, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And continuation bets on the flop and this and that, and I just limped every hand, and he was caught by something he hadn't seen before. I mean, he was definitely caught by surprise.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it actually enabled me to control the action throughout the final. I was very happy the way I played. Obviously, you need some good cards here and there, but really that was a different kind of strategy. And like I said, I mean, I think it's important to disguise your hands pre-flop.
Right.
I mean, sometimes, obviously, when you limp every hand, sometimes you limp with the 8-5. Sometimes you leave with the ace king.
Yeah.
I even had a hand in the semifinal. I limped with aces. My opponent raised, and I just called. And basically, because every time he raised on the button, I never re-raised.
Yeah.
And since I limp every hand and he raises one of them, I never re-rest that either. So basically we played the hand, and I think my aces was pretty well disguised.
No kidding.
As it turned out, I would have won more had I played it a little straightforward.
Yeah.
But again, I think from that hand on, he said, well, every time I limp, he didn't know what the F word I had.
Yeah.
So I think it scared him a little bit, and really I felt comfortable doing it. So actually, I think maybe Gavin Smith is going to be a little surprised when I limp everybody. We'll see what happens.
Now, that's great because you're using your own reputation as a wild man, which I don't believe and I never have. I thought you were just a clever guy who liked to play a lot of flops and outplay people after the flop, which is what you did, particularly in the Aussie Millions and in so many other places. But using that reputation to reverse the psychology on them, there must have been a generation of kids who came along and thought, I'm going to use Gus Hansen's strategy without understanding how you were doing it and how you were using math. So now you're using that against opponents. You're going to freak them out even more.
Well, I mean, I will say, I actually, I'm a little mad at myself because I think it took me too long to realize. Now I'm a little bit back to like regular tournaments, eight-handed.
Yeah, yeah.
I've come to realize that pretty much everybody around, I said that the World Series of Poker, the main event and this and that, it's like eight players I've never seen before, but there's a good chance they've seen me somewhere.
Yep.
And they all consider me playing every hand.
Yeah.
I'm going to bluff, I'm going to bluff again, and I'm going to bluff some more. So really, I have to show the best hand, which is actually why I think the last probably year and a half, I should have started earlier, that's why I'm mad at myself, but the last year and a half, every time I sit down at the table, I say, well, just to tell you guys, I'm going to be the tightest player at the table. They all laugh, and I am the tightest player at the table, but it doesn't matter. They're still going to pay me off every time and this and that. So it's kind of a little bit crazy because I want to come out there and play poker, throw in some bluffs, some continuation, but most of the time, my best strategy right here and now in 2011 is to play good cards and play tight. Obviously, that's tournament strategy. It's going to be a little bit different against Gavin, but just the limping, I think I might just shake him up a little bit before we start.
I love this. This is excellent.
Now, how's that affecting your online play? I mean, you play a lot heads up, and you play pretty big stakes heads up. Are you playing, by the way, no limit or PLO mostly online?
I am mostly playing PLO, and I'm a big fan of the limit games. I really like to play all the games. I play a lot of triple draw. Has kind of gotten a little popular in the high stakes, the Omaha High Low, the stud games. I kind of like them all, but I have to admit, maybe a little bit of my Achilles heel is the PLO. I do like the action. I have to admit that. So, I mean, I think that's a general tendency for most poker players. They do like the action.
Especially for adrenaline junkies like you.
Yes, definitely.
But are you using that strategy against them online too?
I will say I try to mix it up. I've definitely had some sessions where I just limp the button, and then I have some sessions where I go completely berserk. And I will say, without revealing my entire game and strategy and so on, I have had the best results with the little more quiet tactic of the limping. So I think I should incorporate that a little bit more. Like I said, I've already incorporated in my cash game a little bit, but I think I should slow down on the gas pedal a little bit more.
Mm. Well, with the reputation you've had over the last several years, it's going to take a long time of limping before anybody starts believing you.
No, that is very true. It's like I said, in regular tournaments, it's like I have been in situations because we have the newcomers. Amongst one of them is Annette Oberstadt, I think is one of the premier players. I mean, she's definitely for sure one of the toughest female players. And I mean, I'm not going to pick too many guys over her in a no-limit hold'em tournament. She's really an accomplished player. Mm-hmm. And she's aggressive. She makes a lot of min raises before the flop and gets people in awkward situations. But I've been sitting at the table with her, and she raises one hand. I just fold as usual because I'm the tightest player at the table. Mm-hmm. She raises another hand, and then she's raised about 12 hands. And then finally, after an hour and 12 minutes, I decide to raise a hand. And it seems like everybody at the table, except for Annette because she knows what's going on, but everybody else at the table thinks that my hand, after 1 hour and 12 minutes, is worse than all the 10 hands that she had raised me, which is pretty much impossible.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's really the general perception of my holdings. So, I mean, I just got to show a winner.
Can you have a better perception at the poker table than everybody thinks you're bluffing and you keep showing them the nuts over and over and over again? And they
that
still.
Would be awesome.
You do it 99 times on the 100th time, they still think, well, now he's got to be bluffing.
Well, I mean, obviously it's very good. The thing is, though, in tournament poker, you can wait around, and obviously in the beginning you have a big stack, but tournaments are always increasing the blinds, increasing the ante, and you get to a point where you cannot wait around anymore. Now you have to throw in some bluffs, you have to pick up some blinds and antes before the flop, and I'm not really able to do that. So I think in the early stages it's very good. I think in the later stages it's hurting me a little bit, because I think the correct strategy is to be somewhat aggressive and pick up pots, but people will not let me pick up pots. So obviously it's very good if I do have hands, but big hands don't come around that often.
That's true.
And sometimes the big hands, I mean, we know the ace kings and so on. I mean, a lot of times you lose the ace kings to the 10-8 suited.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I think there's some pros and cons.
But it's poker 101, it really is. As long as you know what everybody else at the table thinks you're playing and how you're playing, and you play against it, there you go. Whether it's tight, loose, aggressive, whatever it is. So you're just you're playing smart poker.
Well, I mean, like you said, I mean, adjusting to the situation is very key if you want to be a successful poker player.
That's Gus Hansen joining us here on a special edition of the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championships, where incidentally Gus then went on to lose in the first round match he had against Gavin Smith. Still to come, Faraz Jaka and Barry Greenstein.
This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net, the site that I play on. I want to talk to you today about the online home games that PokerStars now has, the only site that has it. Where it is, you can now take the experience of home games online. PokerStars Home Games lets you create and manage your own private poker club to play online poker games of your choice with just your friends and at your own schedule. Total freedom, total everything. Create a club is easy. You pick a club name, you get an invitation code, and you'll be presented with your own exclusive poker lobby that you can customize with the private home game tables and tournaments of your choosing. Inviting the friends is simple. Just send them the ID. There you go. This is something you totally control. So it's your friends, your schedule, your type of game, your type of stakes, the whole bit like that. This is the only place and the only site that you can do that at. So if you have that home game that maybe is broken apart, if you have it that maybe a few people have moved away from, or you want to start it off, this is the perfect thing. Let PokerStars do the work for you, and you just play the game. See you on PokerStars.net, and check out those home games.
Welcome back to the Final Table. We're joined now by Faraz Jaka, who has made quite a name and bank account for himself in the last couple of years. He cashed in 4 World Series of Poker events last year, came in 3rd in the 5K shootout. He's racked up over $2.3 million in earnings, and we're happy to have you at the Final Table. Hi, Faraz.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
Happy to be here, too.
All right. How long ago did you stop being called the toilet by your friends?
Did I stop? Well, last I checked a few seconds ago, I hadn't stopped yet.
They still. Where did the nickname the toilet come from?
I'm just wondering if it's going to be on my gravestone or not. That's my only concern.
Well, the rumor is that it's because you would keep any 2 cards to draw to a flush.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. Is that the true story?
Yeah. No, I mean, because when I first started, no one really taught me how to play, so I just assumed suited cards are good. But I was good at getting people to call when I hit my flush. So I'd hit a bunch of flushes, and my college friends would be like, damn it, the toilet flushed it again.
So king, deuce, queen, six, anything suited, you were getting it in with.
Yep.
And then who finally took you aside and said, you know, there's more to poker than just trying to make a flush.
Well, apparently no one yet, because that's kind of still how I play.
Well, you must have hit an awful lot of flushes. $2.3 million. Either that,
I might have the record for most flushes ever hit by a professional poker player. Just might.
Tell us about the last year in your life and how things have changed for you as a player.
Well, a lot of it's just more lifestyle, I guess. When I was in college at the University of Illinois, I was half during school, half traveling to like EBTs in Vegas to play. And then when I graduated, I basically was homeless for a year and a half. I was traveling Europe. I'd play EBT in between. I'd just go somewhere random I want to visit, like Ukraine, anywhere Eastern Europe. And I'd literally just go live in hostels and people's couches and just kind of go experience the world. And I loved it. But after about a year and a half, it got a bit draining not having a home base. So that's when I moved to Chicago, which I've been there for about a year and a half. And that's why I switched to the WPT. And I had a lot of success in it. And now I'm going to be moving to L.A., actually. I own a business out in L.A. So I'm just trying to find that balance between putting time into other things in my life besides poker, but still keeping my game sharp and, you know, playing as much as I want to play.
This is excellent because it's exactly what some of the better poker players have been saying, a balanced life, not just, you know, 100% playing poker and live and die and that type of thing, but living a balance, an outside one. You mentioned you have your own business.
I mean, I put a lot of time into, I have real estate, I put money in the stock market, and then I have a caster board in business. So to me, it's like poker is just another one of my investments, you know. It's just a bunch of different income streams.
Lots of people should be listening to this.
Now, we're, of course, here at the NBC National Heads Up Championships this weekend, and you played a lot of shorthanded. Do you prefer that than full ring?
Yeah, I definitely like shorthanded more. I play so many hands as it is, so I'm comfortable being in a lot of pots. A lot of people who are more used to full ring aren't as comfortable, so I could adjust either way. You know, I like both, but, yeah, I think other people are a little less comfortable with it, so that might give me more of an edge.
Are you exclusively a no-limit hold'em player?
Yes, for now. I've thought about maybe getting into mixed games, but back to what I said earlier, any free time I have, I'm kind of putting it towards other stuff. So it is kind of hard to, like, put time to dedicate to learning new games. So maybe it will happen. It's something I want to do, but it's not a super high priority.
How would you categorize playing heads-up versus a full ring? What are the few two or three main points you need to look at or to do?
Well, I mean, in heads-up, it's all about game flow, you know, just reading how your opponent's going to react to the way you're playing. And it's the same thing in a full ring, but you could also focus just more on the math, sit around, wait for big hands. Like, you have a lot more options full ring, whereas this, you got to be in every single hand. Like, you don't have time to wait. Like, you got to play.
So do you C-bet almost all the time? Do you raise on the button all the time?
I'm very specific about what information I reveal to the public.
Just tell us in the past.
There you go.
As everyone knows, I play almost every hand anyways, and I bet a lot. I'm very aggressive. So obviously, heads up, it's going to be pretty similar.
So when you have an aggressive game, as aggressive as yours, we talk a lot on the show about tells, particularly in live and really more in cash games, but I guess it comes into play in tournaments as well.
It can. Yeah.
But when you're a hyper-aggressive player like you, does that even become part of your game?
Tells?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I'm very big on physical tells. I started playing live poker before I played online, so, I mean, I've always been huge on that. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, reading people isn't just about physical tells. It's about predicting their personality. How do they react to you fighting back? How do they react to you sitting back? You know, so you kind of have to figure out, like, there's, like, a lot of different personality types out there, but you can still kind of categorize people into, like, specific groups and predict how they might react.
You're profiling them as soon as you sit down at the table.
Yeah.
So we've talked about that before, and it doesn't make a difference if you're a Western European or Oriental or young or old or male or female. Yeah. There's always something. You have an image in your head when you sit down with that person.
Yeah, a lot of time, you know, you sit down at a cash game table where you don't know anyone. Does he have a ring on his finger? Is he married?
See,
does he have a family to support? Is he going to be more risk-averse because of that? Or is he very neat and clean, you know, like, all those things come in handy.
Little things like how you stack your chips can actually give you an idea of what the personality of that person is and what he's likely to play like. It is. It's excellent.
All right. How so?
Well, okay. In broad terms, I'm not going to get into specifics. Again, I don't like giving up a whole lot either. But in broad terms.
This is the worst part of Dennis's life when we're doing the show and I make him give a lesson on the air because he knows that
I'm just glad you asked him and not me.
Okay, in broad terms, the guy that has nice, neat stacks of chips and in 20 and arranged, you know, all this stuff, is more likely to be a player of that he's going to be more predictable, going to be not quite as aggressive, not going to be quite as loose and everything like that. The guy that has random stacks over here or breaks in a pile and doesn't even bother to stack it for a while, you know, little things like that can give you a hint. I have seen, though, the little old grandmother who, you know, is over here with everything nice and neat and petite and everything like that, be the most aggressive son of a gun you've ever seen at the table. So you never know for sure.
Yep.
But you've got to get a
I need to grab my notebook and start writing my Dennis Phillip notes.
And every once in a while, you look across the table at the bald middle-aged guy and you realize, holy crap, he just played 6-3 off suit.
Yeah. Yep, there you go.
And flop the nuts.
Yeah.
So how does the rest of 2011 look for you? Are you going to be playing as many tournaments as possible?
I'm playing a lot right now. I'm doing a bit. I'm going back to LA after this for the NAPT events, and then I'm going to Bayona 1, doing a couple more WPTs. I'm excited about the new one in Florida. That's real cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll, of course, be out there for the series playing everything. I'm in the process of renting my house right now and getting that all sorted out.
Yeah.
So when you go down to the circuit, especially like to Florida, mm-hmm. do you get involved in the cash games down there then?
Like in LA, I got involved with them quite a bit because they're really good there.
Yep.
Florida's kind of new because I haven't been there, but I'm assuming they'll be good. So, yeah, I do plan to go ahead and do that.
I've been down there. They're good.
Yeah.
You'll have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I pretty much, I'm actually like an Excel freak, so I have every single day of my life on an Excel sheet.
Yeah.
Up like for 6 months ahead. So I kind of plan my whole year up until the WSOP, and then I don't plan anything after the WSOP because that's just such an intense month. Financially, your financial situation can drastically change in that month and a half. So, and you might just be drained. So I have just a blank sheet right after that, and I'll see what I feel like after.
Last 2 weeks of July, nap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure meeting you. We wish you good luck here this weekend and good luck with the rest of the year.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
I do have one suggestion. You need to come up with a different nickname.
All right.
Not a problem.
I don't think I have a choice at this point. There's no turning back.
All right, cool. Well, again, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for
the
having
toilet
me.
Toilet himself, Faraz Jaka, joining us here at the final table.
That's my exit.
After our interview, Faraz went on to play his match against Eugene Kachalov and lose. Kachalov will move on to round two and take on Patrick Antonius tomorrow afternoon. Patrick beat Sorel Mizzi. I am Paul Harris, along with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. We are at the 2011 National Heads Up Poker Championships, and in a moment we'll hear from Barry Greenstein. But first, a reminder about the World Series of Poker Circuit event that is coming to Harrah's, St. Louis, the first 2 weeks of April. Actually, the first nighttime event will be on March 31st. The first ring event will be on April 1st. The main event will be on April 10th. And we're looking forward to having hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of poker players from all over the Midwest and the whole country come to St. Louis and play at Harrah's, not just in the tournaments, but also in the cash games, and also be a part of the Fossil Man Poker Training Seminar that Greg Raymer is going to do on Saturday, April 9th. If you're a listener of this show, you get a special discount. Instead of $299, you only pay $249 for that seminar. For details, go to Greg's website, which is fossilmanpokertraining.com. And as for the circuit event, book your hotel rooms now and check for the whole schedule by going to harrahs.com/STLpoker. That's the website with all the details about this big circuit event that we are looking forward to.
We are now being joined by Barry Greenstein, one of the most well-known and you just have to say it, he's one of the top players in the world and has been for years and years. There's no other way to put it. Known as a Robin Hood of poker, giving away tons of money that way. He's been a top player for year after year after year. Grew up in the Midwest, same as I did. We're basically the same age. Didn't know if you knew that or not. I'm about 3 weeks older than you.
Well, you know what that means? You're old.
You know what? I have to come back to something we talked about last summer when we sat down with you at the Rio, and you talked about how you were past your prime or over the hill. I can't remember the exact phrase you used.
Which I disagreed
with. It has stuck in his craw for 9 months now.
Well, I don't know over the hill, but past my prime, that's certainly true.
Yeah.
But here we are at the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship, and you just beat Scotty Wynn heads up.
Yeah.
You flopped two pair. He flopped a flush draw and a gut shot straight draw. You filled up on the turn and took it down. Did you have a big chip lead at that point?
I had a pretty good lead, actually. Wow. We hadn't done much. At that point, I had 32 and he had 18. And wow. It was real early. You know, I just chipped away. I got pretty lucky. He picked up kings back-to-back early, ace, jack of diamonds, and he showed me one other big hand. Those are the first four hands. But wow. I didn't play any of those four hands. Okay.
Yeah.
And then in the hands we played, you know, I got the best. I didn't actually have – I had ace-queen a couple times, ace-king once, I remember, and a pair of eights. Those are my hands. But they all won.
Yeah.
And I won some money. I won some of his chips, whereas his hands faced error. It was fortunate that I thought it was probably okay just to try to play kind of a straight fundamental game against Scotty. He's not out there doing a lot of things where I got to try to take him off his weak hands. You know, it's not like he was playing too many hands. So I played, reasonably solid. That was my strategy against him, and it worked out. that I didn't monkey around because I might have run into some good things. And then finally, he limped. I had 9-6 of diamonds. I would have raised with his hand. He had king seven. Sorry, I had 9-6 offsuit. He had king seven of diamonds. Flopped 10-9-6 with two diamonds.
Oh, wow.
And
monster.
Yeah, bottom two pair with the chips we had, even though it was still early. We still had a lot of big blinds. Let me see. It's 2 and 400. He had, so we were playing, well, not that much. He had 40. He had 18,000. He had 45 big blinds. So for 40 big blinds, I bet right out with my two pair. He raised me, and I just shoved. I just, you know, get it over with, and he called.
Yeah. When you're playing heads up, do you see bet 100% of the time like you do in other games?
Almost for sure, yeah. I mean, that's more important probably, you know, heads up than otherwise. You know, if, you know, against more than one opponent, now if there's a textured flop, you figure it may hit them. You know, I don't see that 100% of the time there. But especially in these tournaments in press day, I always get a kick out of these people telling me how my strategy is flawed because they read it somewhere or some good player said something else. You know, the closer you get to playing limit hold'em, where limit hold'em's a game where it'd be strange to find a player that doesn't see bet 100% of the time. It's always funny. I watch like a Phil Ivey. He doesn't 100% see bet 100% of the time. He does 95%, and the other 5%, if he flops real big, he check raises. You know, so I mean, it's just these kids who have these like any people who go by these theories. You know, again, mine isn't 100% of the time either, but you know, most of the time you're gonna continuation bet. It's just the way the game is, and especially in depressed stack situations, which we get in tournaments and these things, and limit hold'em. The game really doesn't start till after the guy with the betting lead makes his bet. If you're against multiple opponents, that's a different story. You know, then there's enough out there and you have nothing, you're probably going to want to give it up. And there's always guests, you know, there's always like against some players, if they're going to try to take you off your continuations bet, like I say, sometimes you'll check raise them instead because, you will give it up because you don't want to play them. But I'm saying if you have a good hand, you may check raise, or sorry, you may bet and three bet them too. So there are all sorts of things to do off of that.
You must run into that a lot because of your reputation for mostly continuation betting. You must have particularly some of these younger, aggressive players who know that about you who are going to come back at you with nothing.
Not at all. All the good players continuation bet most of the time. That's just people on the forums who don't get it. You know.
Well, sometimes they don't. Internet players are good players. They're quality players. They're playing a ton of hands. There's still a big difference between internet and live player. When you're playing heads up against a guy, you're going to make most of the standard plays. You're going to do it. You're going to try and get a read on the opponent. You're going to try and get a little bit of a chip advantage so that if you do lose that race, you're still in okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it's pretty standard poker.
Yeah, watch any of the good players. They're raising and betting, too. It's just the way the game is. You know, that's
like so what's it like for you to play against a veteran like Scotty? You guys have to know each other's game backwards and forwards at this point.
No, not at all. Because, you know, I'm a cash game player mostly, and Scotty doesn't play with me in the cash games. I did play with him for, like, the first or second time, you know, a week ago or two at the Commerce. But, no, not at all. People get this idea because they see someone on TV and someone else on TV that we play together. But that's not the case at all. You know, just another guy in the tournament field. So, no, not. I played with Scotty 10 times or so.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean.
Well, we were in the draw last night, and granted, 64 people, invitation only. There's a few celebrities and a few qualifiers, but basically it's a hard field up and down of qualified good pros. Were there any people in there that you really wanted to avoid in this first round, or somebody you wanted to play, maybe because you've never played them before even? But.
Well, in this type of thing, I actually usually want to play whoever has the best name reputation because among the good players, anyone who's, you know, what I consider a professional player, you're really not going to ever be more than a 6-5 favorite or worse than a 6-5 dog with this kind of format. I mean, you could kind of sit it out the first couple rounds and get to where you're essentially flipping towards the end.
Yeah.
Maybe, like I said, you're down a few thousand in chips. So there's certainly no one I'm afraid of. There are some players better than others. Probably the people I don't want to play, it's more because they're closer friends of mine rather that I'm afraid of them. And so, you know, that was it. I mean, you know, for pragmatic reasons, you probably would rather play one of the qualifiers, and I'm not counting Justin Young as one of the qualifiers because he qualified in that thing they have, I guess, here. But
yes.
He's obviously a good player. But, you know, against the qualifiers, you can get to where you probably are a 2-1 favorite, which is a very, very rare in one of these heads-up crapshoot type of deals. But against, like, say, against normal players, it's not going to be a big deal one way or the other. So you might as well, if you're going to win it or try to win it, be able to say, look, at I beat, you know, Ivy, I beat, you know, I don't know who to name next. But, I mean, these days, Patrick obviously has a big name.
Yep.
Even we have Jungleman in the field now who's been doing some good things. You have some of the good online players, Phil Galfond, you know, those types of guys. So you might as well try to, you know, rack them up on your resume as you go towards the thing rather than, you know, playing, you know, some of the qualifiers. Some of the matchups you almost don't want to have, like I've been pretty fortunate card-wise in my first rounds here. And you know, I've actually won them each year. And but twice I had to play, I think, Vanessa Russo.
Hmm.
And that was a bad matchup because Vanessa's very competent. But especially a couple years ago, now she's got a resume because she went deep a couple years ago and she's done some good things. But initially, it was like I'm facing a woman who's a good player and not everyone realizes it.
Yeah.
And so it's like if I lose, I'm the idiot. You know, I mean, what am I doing? And if I win, it's like, well, so what? You know, you're supposed to win. And that's essentially what happened to me in the, I think it was the third or fourth round last year, is I had a really good, I had two relatively tough matches. I can't remember who they were. Vanessa was one of them and someone else. And then it looked like the good players got knocked out. The people were the favorites. And I had, like, Jerry Yang, then Yanny. It looked like Jerry Yang, Annie Duke, and someone else going on. Looked like a clear road. It was a very deep stack type of, you know, best, you know, 6 out of 11 or something like that thing where a better player can, you know, kind of rack up an edge. Looked really clean for me at that point. I play Jerry Yang. I get an ace-king, and I re-raise, he calls, and board comes, like, queen-jack, 8. And I bet, and he calls, and a king on the turn, and it was a little fishy. I can't remember what happened. I think I bet, and he min-raised me or something. He had 10-9 is anyway what happened.
Oh,
and so I lost, like, a lot of my chips on this one hand, and I never recovered. I don't think I called on the river, but, you know, he got me pretty good on that one hand. So the whole thing is this type of thing. You know, one hand like that, you lose it, and, you know, now it's the fourth round, and it's shoving. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Let me ask you about high-stakes poker. The new season just debuted last weekend. Do you watch yourself on TV?
I sometimes do, like when I'm playing online, although it's a little difficult on my laptop. I'll try to put some of the things where I've played. The one of the things I haven't done, and it hurt me really badly this year, and it probably hurt me before, I don't watch much poker on TV. And there was an amateur in one of my lineups, but I never know what my lineups are. I think some people find out, but I never have because that's what they said you're not supposed to. And so I haven't watched some of these people play, and I had a real big decision against one of the amateurs, and whether he was bluffing, could be bluffing here. And I'd heard he kind of monkeys around, even though he hadn't done too much. And I had a decision whether to call him down or fold, and I made the wrong decision. And maybe if I'd watched film, and I'd never seen him play before. I played with him for about 10, not many minutes at all, like a half a level in a WPT event or something like that. And he made some weird, he lost a lot of chips in a weird way. So I didn't think he was that good. But now I've played with him, and I just played with him at the Commerce tournament, and he busted me out of that.
Mm.
And so, you know, the guy, even though he's an amateur, you know, I, you know, haven't played against him well, you know. And again, having studied film, you know, maybe I'd have done something differently. So, you know, I think it hurts that I've actually got other things going on in my life, let's say, that, you know, I'm not watching film and doing other things. But,
you know, your story is almost identical to the one Vanessa Selves told us when she got involved in a big hand early on against Phil Ruffin. And she had been told ahead of time, you know, this guy likes to mix it up and likes to play really loose. And so she made a disastrous shove with a pair of queens when he had flopped a set of threes. And Dennis and I, when we watched the thing online later, both of us said, what is she doing, you know, for the way this guy's acting and all that sort of stuff? And, it, of course, it's very different when you're watching it on TV with the close-ups and all that as opposed to having to make the decision in real time at the table.
Well, I was sitting next to Vanessa that hand, as you might know. And, of course, I didn't think she had that big a hand because she played it pretty passively pre-flop. And here's Vanessa, a known crazy person.
Yeah, she limped with queens.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
I can't remember
the third
exactly how it went.
Or something. Yeah.
I can't remember how it went down, but I thought she had two opportunities to do something
she
with
did.
It or something. I can't remember how the action went. So, you know, I didn't think she had the hand she had to begin with. But that's, you know, that's one of those things that happens in poker where if you underrepresent your hand, now you feel you know, they don't know you've got that good a hand. And so now if when they make a big bet, you feel I have to go with it. They can't ever put me on this. And we'll put her on that. So at the time, it looked like kind of a questionable play against an amateur. And my play later, I'm foreshadowing, is going to probably look worse than hers, I think.
Ooh.
I didn't lose as much as she did. It wasn't an all-in situation. But still, I mean, at least I feel worse than she felt about hers. Because later we'll see in the next couple episodes with Phil Ruffin, what she was told about him was right. Phil not only likes to mix it up, I talked to him before we went on the show, and he's a very wealthy man for people who've looked him up. You know, an example is like he did business with what's his name, Trump,
mm-hmm. Donald Trump,
and like Donald Trump's a small fry compared to Phil Ruffin. That, you know, Phil Ruffin was the money man, not Donald Trump, and like you know, Phil Ruffin probably owns part of Trump Towers, and where I live there, Trump owns the golf course and the lots, and Phil got a lot there, and I'm saying, but Phil was the money man, not Donald Trump, okay?
Okay.
That so, says a lot.
Yeah, so Phil's big bucks. And he told me, I played in the Army, I haven't played that much. I've got $500,000 here I'm going to throw off to the boys. That's what he told me. He said, yeah, well, I just decided I'd go on TV, throw off $5,000, have a good time. So we will see, all the people are saying Vanessa Selps is a donkey. Vanessa's a good player, first
oh, yeah.
of all.
Oh, yeah.
And you
yeah,
don't
absolutely.
Like having a fight with her at the poker table. And the next thing is they will see in subsequent episodes that, yeah, it's going to be hard to get away from a hand against Phil Ruffin because he plays a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of the old things that the guy plays that way against me, catches a set, and then you see your chips go to everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but... Phil's got some play to him. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not saying good play, bad play, but there's play. He's not just sitting there.
Now, Barry, when we've talked about high-stakes poker with you before, you said that you didn't like the last couple of years where the lineup was all pretty good pros, you know, Duran, Antonius, and Ivy, and others who were in there, in addition to some of the Poker Stars pros, that you wanted to get some of these rich guys who could get in there, because that's why you play the game, is to make money. So you must be much happier this year.
Yeah, I didn't know I said that. I mean, I like playing against, you know, tough competition too, but I'm there to try to make money. I think what I said is I'm not there to be on TV anymore,
right.
whether it's
okay.
any of these things. I'm there to try to win some money. You know, if I was an athlete, that sounds kind of against the nature of the game. I should be there for the competition. But as a poker player, that is the game. So it's a very different type of thing. I mean, you know, I enjoy competition too, and I want to beat the best players. So, no, I don't mind playing against that. But still, in the end, you know, I want to play in a situation where I think I rate to win, and, you know, that's why I'm on these things. So, yeah, they were better lineups from the point of view of trying to make some money. We had three amateurs in each lineup. Really, we haven't had that in these poker shows for a long time. On the other hand, for the serious poker players, they don't care about that. They want to see, you know, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball. They don't want to see the minor leagues. So I understand their point of view. But I think the good mix, and it also kind of shows them more, I think it's more instructive probably for the player at home, because this is closer to what they're going to be seeing, some good players and some bad players in their game at whatever level they're playing. And they'll see a lot of times, you know, again, you know, I played Nolan Holm for a living for many, many years, now I'm more of a mixed game player. But the way I made money, even though it's not that I felt I took a back seat to any player in the game, but it wasn't trying to take down the other good players. It was usually playing them carefully and exploiting the weaker players. That's yeah. really, you know, what my job was.
Yeah.
And so this is more in line with my job. Now, I know the first episode aired where, you know, I made what I thought was a pretty good bluff. It was a play where if he was bluffing, my hand was good, but there was a good chance he had hit on the river against me, and I check-raised him. And it was kind of a stinky bluff because I was in middle position of three players, and I checked. if you know the hand. And you'd have thought if I had a big hand, I'd already bet it, because, you know, usually if you're second to act in a three-way pot and you have the betting lead, you don't want to check because maybe that first player is going to call you down. And the second player, the player behind you, is nothing. So there was a little bit of stuff going on there where maybe an expert player would have picked me off. But again, against an amateur, he hasn't been in that situation as much. And you know, I think it was a good play I made, and it worked.
But to shift just a little bit, because I like your perspective on this. There's been a lot of action and non-action on the legislative and trying to make this a legalizing the poker within the U.S. Just recently, there's a veto on the bill that was in front of the governor of New Jersey. So now that's going back there. Do you see any movement on that in the near future? Is this going to be a dead issue for a while? What can we look for as an average poker player just wanting to have a level playing field?
Okay, well, week to week, you know, I do get to talk to some of the higher-ups of PokerStars who are involved in this, and even people, you know, from, you know, Full Tilt or and some of the you know, representative senators, you know, who are dealing with these issues. And it's certainly not a dead issue. That's the first thing. This is every week you could, like, say there's an uptick or a downtick. You know, we're a little concerned at PokerStars about it eventually becoming something like in Europe, where every state's every country's trying to have its own site, and we're concerned that right now the momentum is toward every state having its own regulation body and their constituents playing, because the poker's just not going to be as good. You know, one of the things that I certainly like about playing on the internet, and I think most people do, is you get to play with people from all around the world, which not only is that kind of fascinating, but the other thing is you get to get these incredible tournaments. I mean, I play on at PokerStars and tournaments like on a Sunday that just can't be created in a live situation. I mean, matter of fact, tomorrow, I don't know when your show's going out, or in Sunday, that's I guess in 2 days, they're having a $200 buy-in tournament where it's going to have a $5 million prize pool. I mean, it's just, I mean, we're talking about a prize pool bigger than World Series events, but we're buying them for $200. And so if they break it up, we're not going to be able to have that kind of stuff. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of fun, really, that we are able to have people all around the world playing on these online sites.
I don't think people realize that within the 50 states, I don't know the exact number, but the player pool probably doesn't justify playing it state by state in more than five or six states.
Yeah, I'm in California, which is obviously one of the good states, but it just, it'd be ridiculous.
You don't want to be an online player in Wyoming.
Yeah,
like 15 or 16 people in the tournament.
Well, it's even worse there aren't many people in Washington, state of Washington, because there we have a governor who's taken money from the Indian casinos who told her don't support online poker. So it's always annoying in our country in the year 2011 when we still, I mean, we talk about Libya and Egypt and Tunisia and the governing there, about how those people are on the take, and here we've got it pretty open in our country, too, and we can't get rid of these people. I mean, if we had good legislators, we wouldn't be running into this problem, but it's just we have too many people taking money from someone else. And not to say that, you know, we don't have a lobby also, but it just shouldn't be that way. The right, you know, things that people do in the privacy of their own home should be legal when they're not hurting other people, and things that hurt other people shouldn't be. And so, and not things that legislators get paid to rule against should be illegal. It just shouldn't be that way.
I agree 100% with that.
All that being said, the legislation that was being considered during the lame duck session, well, for lack of a better word, seemed lame to me and to a lot of other people, with the blackout period and all the rest of
that. What happened is they were grasping at straws, but all that type of Russian do this stuff is, again, because now we have a lobby. So we are pushing our agenda. It's the way, you know, our system works with all the lobbyists and things like that. You know, unfortunately, it is the nature of the beast. Yeah. And if we had had a lobby for or 2006, this we probably wouldn't have had the stuff overturned to begin with. You know, but we it was because the online site's not realizing this could happen like it did so quickly, And there were actually all sorts of fights over client lists and different things. Mm. That's why they didn't get together like they have since.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, I'm curious about, as we move forward through this spring season and get closer to the World Series of Poker, what you think about some of the changes that they've made for tournaments at the series and whether you'll be playing in some of those. And also I'm curious about how's Bobby's room doing, because we hear that the big game rarely goes anymore.
Well, it didn't go that much anyway because, you know, I don't live in Vegas, and most time it goes during the World Series of Poker or during some of the big Bellagio tournaments. The economy's down a little bit from what it was before. We have some people, you know, play online, and some people play, you know, the European players maybe don't come in. They have their own stuff there. So the poker's a little more spread out, whereas the reason the action went so big and heavy in Bobby's room during any tournament before was that was the only place really the big poker was played. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
But we have, I always joke, the real Bobby's room, Bobby Belande, runs a game at the Aria, which it's not as big as, you know, I used to play, but I'm not playing as big as I used to play either. But if I'm in Vegas, I usually take a stop over the Aria. It's a game where, you know, you can win 30,000-40,000 if you know, it's not where you're going to win 200,000 or 300,000 like you could in a Bobby's room type of thing. But they have a good little game going on. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to call, see if there's, now that I'm done with my match for the day, you know, I'm going to call and see if there's anything going on over there. Of course, that other Bobby's room is called the Ivy Room.
I saw, what are you playing there?
I saw Phil Ivy on a cell phone there once. I think that was about it.
What do you play in the Belande?
It's like 10 games. You know, it's mixed games and Badoogie and Badoosi and you know, Horst and Triple Draw and, you know, Deuce and things like that. You know, it's the normal mix that we play also in California.
Yeah, you must be thrilled that they're going to have a 10-game mix at the series this year.
Yeah, you know, I assume, you know, I'm on the committee, and so, you know, all these changes you're talking about, you know, I was certainly involved in all the discussion, so none of it's as much a surprise to me. I was afraid one of the debates, you know, some of the things we're not supposed to say, but there was consideration for a while of just knocking out the 3,000 horse and making it a 3,010 game. But the 3,000 horse really gets a lot of entrance. I didn't want to do that, and a lot of other people didn't either. And so we just, we went against what some of the top guys are here. They want to keep it so we don't just keep putting out new bracelet events. So a bracelet means something. So they didn't want any more expansion. Like, you know, every time someone says, why don't we have this event, just adding it.
Yeah.
It's really been a choice for the most part. So sometimes people say, hey, that was a good event last year, why don't we have it? Well, because it was a choice whether we have that, or this year we brought back the half stud, eight or better, half, oh my, eight or better, something like that. So there's always choices. Mm-hmm. It was six-handed PLO. It's in there this year. It was a popular, but I mean, we had to change, take out one of the other regular PLOs or something like that. So they did add an event. They finally bit the bullet and said, okay, we don't want to lose anything. We're just going to throw this thing in to one of the 5 o'clock slots and
so
add an extra bracelet.
Yeah, 58 bracelet events there.
That's the 58th event, if you want to know.
So Badoogie is back in the World Series.
Well,
now,
some people wanted it straight on or some sort of Badoogie mix, and we said, and we eventually as a committee decided to introduce it this way, and maybe next year some sort of standalone Badoogie Badoosi, who knows what we'll do.
Another Flipple Draw or something like they had down at PCA.
Right, who knows?
You know, who knows? Something interesting. They can vary it. That's good. It's getting to be an awful lot of bracelets, though.
Barry, it's always a pleasure. I noticed that as soon as you got knocked out of the heads up, the first thing you did was pick up your phone. I assume you had tweeted like you always do?
Yeah, you know, I tweeted my results because, you know, just to my friends, like even my girlfriend who wasn't down here, she's upstairs. She can get it that way. There's other friends of mine who want to see how I did. So I use Twitter as mass email for people who are following me, or mass text messaging.
Right. Yep.
It's just a simpler way to go. And then other people, you know, get to see it. And again, I'm sponsored by PokerStars, so they kind of like me to be involved in the social media stuff, you know, for people who are following their pros. So it's the normal way for me to do it. And so the main reason I wanted to do it is so my girlfriend would see the result. And then, as you saw, she came down, of course, when the match was over.
Right in the, she came in mid-tweet.
Right, exactly, that's true. Hey, that, I don't know, that sounds a little provocative there.
Yes, it does.
She caught me mid-tweet.
Well, thanks, Barry. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Paul. And I'm always happy to see that you're putting up a thread on Poker Road to announce when the shows go up. And
absolutely.
I there's some discussion. I'd like there to be more on there, but obviously, you know, we always viewed Poker Road as a resource for poker players, so whatever stuff is good in poker, it's somewhere found on the site.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're happy to do it. Thanks, Barry.
Sure.
That's Team Poker Stars Pro Barry Greenstein joining us here on this special bonus edition of the Final Table from Caesars Palace in Las Vegas at the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship. Don't forget, Tuesday on our next regularly scheduled show, Phil Galfond and Joe Hashem together, plus Vanessa Selbst, and on future shows, Peter Eastgate and Jason Alexander. If you've missed any of our previous shows, go to thechipleader.com and click on the podcast there. You'll also be able to get any of the previous shows by the guests. You just look on the right side of the blog, and we've got every guest listed there as well. You can go back and listen to over 100 shows we've done over the past 2 years. Thanks for subscribing via iTunes or just listening to them directly via thechipleader.com. Until Tuesday, thanks for listening.